everybody here. Mark Medina, the Warriors beat writer with the Bay Area News Group. Another episode of the Warriors HQ podcast. Back with my partner in crime, friend, colleague, columnist of the Bay Area News Group, Dieter Kurtenbach, the man of many opinion and takes. And this is the right platform because there's a lot of takes, a lot of opinions going on with the Warriors and the state of things. Let's hear the greatest hits, Dieter.
Well, you lose by 33 points. We're not exactly going to be cheering your praises here out on the streets. The Warriors were both apathetic and sucky against the Boston Celtics. It's a deadly combination. I got some thoughts on it. I know you got some thoughts on it. Draymond Green had some thoughts on it.
Steve Kerr's got some thoughts on it. Everyone's got some thoughts on it.
One would hope they would have some thoughts. It would be worse if they came in and they go, we don't know what happened. That would be a really bad situation. At least in this case, they're pretending as if they know how to fix it. And it sounds like we're going back to the chorus of this time last year, flipping the switch.
Yeah, and there's so many components with that, right? Because, hey, the Warriors have been down this path before. They've been in four consecutive NBA finals. They know that what matters is when they play in April, May, and June, as opposed to these forgettable games in March, even marquee games that, you know, in theory could serve as playoff previews. But you're looking at this season. They have some new personnel, a lot of young guys. This guy named DeMarcus Cousins they're trying to integrate. They just signed Andrew Bogut. But when you're looking at this year compared to last year, how much of it is it just a matter of flipping the switch versus things being a lot more complicated than that?
It feels very different because of the DeMarcus Cousins inclusion. Not only is this team just apathetic out there, and that's understandable, right? They're going out, they're going through the motions. If it's not working for them early, it's probably not going to work for them at all that night because they know how to pack it in. But the Cousins element creates a level of complexity that they haven't had. And they talked about that level of complexity before Cousins came in as a positive thing. He's going to add a dimension that we've never had before. This is something that we've never seen before. Well, they're having to figure this out on the fly. It is something they've never dealt with before, and it isn't exactly working all that well at the moment. So you have those two things working in juxtaposition. Warriors don't have as much time as maybe I think they have. They only have 5 weeks left in the regular season. They have to both get their attitude and their energy right for the postseason, and they have to get Cousins on the right track. And I don't think that those things can technically really be done without, you know, both coming along. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think both of those things have to be working at the same time for the Warriors to feel going into the playoffs that they're in a good space. Not a lot of games. I mean, going into the playoffs, okay, you don't want to figure this out the day before the playoffs start. You don't want to figure this out in the first round of the playoffs. You want to make sure that you are in as cohesive of a place as you can be in 4 weeks or so. And that's enough time to figure this out. But man, they better get to getting.
Yeah, and the thing that's fascinating with the Warriors is I think there is a level of self-awareness that there's been a pattern of this. There's been a multitude of quote-unquote marquee games that they did not get up for. They are aware of the deficiencies with DeMarcus Cousins just by virtue of the fact that they made the deal official with signing Andrew Bogut. And, you know, he's going to be playing a limited role, but the fact that they want to get an insurance policy for the worst-case scenarios of DeMarcus's health, best-case scenarios if they need a lot of defensive help. And then, you know, when you talk to Draymond Green and Steve Kerr today, they kind of had a little bit of an air it out meeting during practice today where they kind of let everything out in the open and, you know, everyone was honest about their self-critiques, Steve Kerr included, players included. So there's an awareness of it. But the problem is they've been talking about this for a while, but they haven't been doing.
And that's what I find kind of weird. Like, yes, we know that they can flip the switch. We have seen it in this season that they have looked fantastic. We have not seen it, I would argue, with DeMarcus Cousins fully in tow. They played exceptional basketball when Cousins first came into the fold. And that was actually a lot easier because they weren't force-feeding Cousins the ball. He had to assimilate to them because they were playing great basketball right before he got in there, and he didn't want to mess up that groove. And then, particularly after the All-Star game, it seems as if the Warriors are sort of catering to Boogie as opposed to Boogie kind of fitting in with the Warriors. And I just don't necessarily think that's a recipe for success with this team. And they got to figure out the give and take on that thing here pretty soon, because not only is Cousins a clear liability on the defensive end, and that's not something that's really going to change. If the Warriors improve their effort, it won't be as glaring. But when you have no effort and Boogie's getting targeted, I think he got targeted like on 12 of the first 14 Celtics possessions yesterday, and that created an 11-0 lead for Boston. When that's happening and he got nobody working very hard behind him, it's game over. But even on the offensive end, you're seeing problems. There's a lot of post-ups. There's a lot of flow stopping. Feed the ball to Boogie and let him cook stuff. That works with the second unit. I don't think it necessarily works with the four All-Stars. And they need to figure out how DeMarcus Cousins fits in with that group. Because if he's not part of that super lineup, if he's not necessarily the closer, then maybe he shouldn't be a starter either going into the postseason. Because, frankly, this team's been torpedoed by slow starts in the last couple of games.
Without doubt. That brings up a point. I want to introduce some of the stuff that Draymond Green said about kind of the state of things after practice today. But, Dieter, you hit on a really good point that I want to get onto after we hear from Draymond Green. So take a listen.
You know, 3 years ago or 2 years ago, whatever it was, I didn't foresee this happening. But I'm excited as hell about it, so it's good.
What do you expect his role will be with this team now?
I mean, I'm not the coach, you know, so I don't know quite how minutes work or nothing like that, but I do know what Boogie brings to the table. Obviously, great defense. Extremely high IQ. And a great playmaker, you know, so I know what he's going to bring to the table. As far as role, that's not really, you know, my job.
You said in the past that you've learned defensively from him early in your career, right? What specifically did you learn from him on that?
I learned how to guard the post first. The first day I got here, he kind of showed me how you can guard the post in the NBA, which I had no clue. You know, leaving college, you got to kind of guard the post with your chest, which is ridiculous. In the NBA, you get torched guarding the post with your chest. So, my first day here, he taught me that. But then just different defensive rotations, and most importantly, how to communicate on that side of the ball.
What about his physical play? Does that add a little bit to what you guys make?
Definitely. Down the stretch, we're going to need that. When I say down the stretch, I mean the playoffs, by the way. We're going to need that physicality. So, absolutely.
Personality, how's that fits in nicely with you guys again, right? Just
because
y'all, a bunch of you know him and kind of keep things loose.
But it's fit the first time. And, we're not, I think we've all grown as people, as men, but I don't think we've changed. So I can't foresee it not working this time or fitting this time. You know, it's our brother. You know, we're looking forward to having him back here.
When did you guys talk about today in practice? Nobody was happy last night after that one. Steve said he wants you guys to play angry, and Kevin said everybody needs to be better.
We sucked. We got embarrassed. But it's just about competing. You know, I don't think we came out with the, right intensity level, with the playing with that competitive spirit that we need to play with in order to win games at a high level. And so, we just got to compete. We compete, can't nobody beat us. And even sometimes when we don't compete, people still can't beat us. But we need to compete. It's frustrating. You gotta pick and choose your spots. You know, that's one thing I've learned over the course of time. It's just pick and choosing your spots. Sometimes you just gotta chalk it up, charge it to the game. And then sometimes it's the time and place to say something. Last night we were so out of it, I didn't think that was really the time and place to say nothing. You just charge over to the game and then come back and, fix it today.
Steve also said that he needs to do a better job getting you guys ready for him. So a few questions off of that. Do you appreciate what a coach says that? Is there more he can do to get you guys ready? Or are there some things that the players just need to get ready themselves?
Both. I think, you obviously appreciate when your coach takes some responsibility, because we're all in this together. We win together, we lose together. We get glory together. We take the punishments together. You know, and so, you know, that's always good. As far as him getting us ready, is there more he can do? I think there's always more he can do. I think there's always more our entire coach staff can do. And then on the flip side of that, there's way more that we can do as players. Because at the end of the day, they can do all that they can do. And if we come out lacking energy and dead like we did last night, it's not going to matter. And so the responsibility falls on everybody. Them being as good as they can possibly be as a coaching staff, which we know what they're capable of. And then us being as good as we can possibly be as players, which we also know we're capable of. So just got to put it all together. But we're fine.
With that starting lineup, is it just some growing pains right now? What do you attribute it to? And what's it going to take to get to that next level?
Oh, I think so many people are kind of looking at the starting lineup and saying, like DeMarcus in there and the defense is worse, but our defense has been horse shit no matter who's in there. And, it's it's easy to look at the numbers and think the numbers tell a story, but the fact of the matter is we haven't been competing. So, you know, we can look at it and say, oh, man, that starting lineup hasn't done well, or, you know, this, that, and the other on defense or offense, however you want to break it down. But the fact of the matter is if you're not competing, you really don't know if it worked or not, you know. So it starts with competing at the level we need to compete at. Then you can kind of get a better read on what's working and what isn't. But right now, you can't get a read because we're not competing at a high level.
Is the vibe around the team around the locker room good right now?
I think so. I don't see a problem with the vibe of the team. We just haven't competed. But then, you know, got to set some goals too, which we talked about today. Like, what are our goals? You know, you expect to go out there and compete every day, but if you're not playing for something in particular, what are you really competing for? You know, we can use the old cliche line of like, oh, where every time you step on the floor, you want to get better. But like, we didn't do that last year and we still ran through the playoffs. And so it's easy to take that mindset again and say, yeah, like, we'll just get to the playoffs and we'll turn it on. I don't want to live on the edge like that. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the switch flips on. I don't want to do that. I think we need to continue to get better and lock in right now. And so that's, you know, what matters now. Nothing else really matters right now.
Last year,
you see any similarities with your guys' mindset last year? Not quite. Last year was treacherous. I don't see quite the same other than the last few games we really haven't competed it. But it's not the same.
What is goals in that set?
We need to execute better. We need to defend better. And we need to get home court. We don't need to get home court, but we want to get home court. So
Who spoke up?
Everybody. A lot of people spoke up, which was good.
How have you felt about your defense? Do you feel like you're in line to be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year again, which I know is a goal?
With the way our defense is playing as a team, it's impossible. And that's just not, you know, that falls on me as the leader of that side of the ball. It falls on me to get guys to lock in on that side of the ball. I haven't done a good job of that because we're clearly not locked in on that side. So, that directly falls on me to get. You know, sometimes in life you got to make people do what they necessarily may not want to do. Defense is usually one of those things. No one really wants to play defense. So, I have to focus on that and do a better job at that.
Can you give us a couple specific examples on defense of things you're not doing? It's kind of vague to say that you got to be more intense or whatever, but are there any specific? And that's switching it up.
I think teams are just getting what they want. You got to take, in this league, it's about taking teams out of their patterns. You know, everyone got their patterns and what they're used to, and when you see a team struggle, it's usually because the team took them out of what they really wanted to do. And we haven't taken anyone out of what they want to get to. When you don't, you know, you just let us run our offense. It's second nature. You make somebody have to counter or go away from what they're really trying to get to, then it becomes a little tougher. So you got to take teams out their patterns. And that starts with aggression. It starts with ball pressure. And it starts with, you know, everybody, you know, moving together, working together on that side of the basketball.
Okay, so Dieter, you mentioned an interesting talking point about DeMarcus Cousins' starting lineup, their slow starts. The numbers don't lie. The plus-minus combinations are pretty horrific. Steph Curry's shooting numbers to open the first quarter are pretty horrific. They're like in the high 30s, and that's not Steph Curry. He's usually draining them pretty efficiently. But what I find kind of challenging is... how much do you pin that on DeMarcus versus the team's overall apathy? But then that opens up a whole other set of questions, because when DeMarcus came on board, the whole talking point was, hey, this is going to add some jolt to the regular season. This is going to keep the team engaged. This is going to give them some puzzle to figure out. All of a sudden, they don't really feel like figuring this puzzle out. What's the deal?
It's interesting. I was talking to somebody last night as the game was winding down, because the fourth quarter didn't matter, and I hightailed it out of there and was down in the press room and chatting it up. And I was talking with somebody else, and they said maybe DeMarcus Cousins' biggest aid to the team, biggest responsibility to the team came before he played, in that the thought of Boogie coming kept guys generally engaged to a certain point. I push back on it a little bit, because ultimately we saw this team pretty apathetic, and they can kind of fall back on, well, we're not 100% yet. We don't have our full squad yet, so why the hell should we care all that much? But just the theory of Boogie coming in did seem to spark some joy with these guys, or fear or anger, whatever it is Kevin Durant thinks that they should be playing with right now. But now that is worn away, and now now you're dealing with results as opposed to theory. And the results for DeMarcus Cousins just haven't quite been there. We're seeing marked offensive improvement, but when he doesn't have a good offensive game, as he didn't against the Celtics, and frankly, he hasn't had against very good teams and elite level centers so far this season, he's a total liability out there. So I just don't know what the correct answer is. I do know that we're not going to find that answer. And this is Draymond mentioned this today. We're not going to find that answer unless we see the Warriors actually try. Until they actually give a damn, we have no idea what the baseline is for this starting lineup. And it might not get much better. But right now, that is all conjecture and theory in our minds, and the Warriors actually have to start putting some results together, because we're getting the results from DeMarcus Cousins. It'd be nice to be able to have a control for the starting lineup when they're actually trying.
Yeah, Dieter, I think one thing that we need to distinguish to Warrior fans out here is just kind of the difference of what the Warriors are going through with this regular season malaise. Last season, they lost 10 of their last regular season games, partly because of boredom, but there were also overlapping injuries to their all-stars. And you go down the list, it involved Steph Curry, involved Klay Thompson, involved Kevin Durant, involved Draymond Green. They were able to, quote-unquote, flip the switch because those guys got healthy. They also had experienced role players. Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston still there, but David West, were they know what they're doing. They can hold the fort down. Here, they have a lot of patchwork lineups, a lot of young guys that you don't know what you're going to get. Alphonso McKinney, Quinn Cook, Kevon Looney has been, I'm not slandering him, he's been consistent for the most part, but there's been a little bit of a drop-off. But Jordan Bell, you don't know what you're going to get. And then, you know, Jonas Repko is a veteran, but he's been a wild card. Jacob Evans, I mean, there's a reason why he hasn't been playing a lot. He got some some minutes in the stat sheet. We'll say he had 6 points, 3-for-3 shooting, but he also appeared on a poster last night and wasn't one that he once advertised. So there's a lot of growing pains there. And the fact that, yes, the Warriors have missed Klay Thompson these past two games. There were also other handful of games where Kevin Durant took a rest day. Andre Iguodala took a rest day. In normal seasons, that didn't really matter if they sat one of their all-stars, one of their core players. And all of a sudden, it's throwing everything out of whack this season.
Well, this is a very top-heavy team, and I don't think that's necessarily a terrible thing. You look at the teams that get the most points from their starters, and those are the best teams in the NBA. Those are your five best players in theory. And ultimately, your starters, they're not always, it's not like hockey where there's full line changes. Like, there's going to be a starter on the court pretty much every minute of the game. And we've seen that certainly with this Warriors team. But yeah, they're not getting anything consistent off the bench. Even Sean Livingston, who I think the world of as a player from these last 4 years, he has really taken a step down. Andre Iguodala has been absolutely fantastic. We should point this out. He has been on a defensive run as of late. And frankly, his play over the last couple of months has just been, it's been understated how good he is. Ben. He looks like a new man out there, and now he has a new haircut to go with it. He just shaved his head the other night. But and Boogie has been very good with that second unit. And so that is something to take solace in and to say, okay, there are positives to be gleaned from that. But yeah, you see how top heavy this team is, and particularly with the Clay stuff that you mentioned. They haven't had him. That cannot be the full reason why they're slumping, and that can't be the full reason why they're 24th in the NBA in defensive rating over their last 10 games, which is not championship level, to say it kindly. But when Clay's not out there, there's no backup for him. We talk about the Warriors used up their 15th roster spot to get Andrew Bogut onto the team. That was the much ballyhooed 15th roster spot. We know who that guy is now. That doesn't mean that Damian Lee, a guy who's in the 16th spot ostensibly, isn't going to be on this roster come playoff time. But it does mean that somebody on this team is going to be cut if the Warriors decide to go down that road. And frankly, the leader in the clubhouse for that is a guy who started at shooting guard against the Boston Celtics in Alphonso McKinney. That tells you the lack of depth this team has at the wing, at shooting guard, whatever you want to call it. And it's not something that they can fix overnight. They need Klay Thompson in the lineup because Klay is one of like the seven guys they can rely on every single night. Same goes for Curry. Same goes for Durant. In years past, Steph Curry didn't even play in the first round of last year's playoffs, and he missed a good chunk of the second round too. But the Warriors were fine because they were so loaded. They were so much better than the competition. That margin has shrunk every year since Kevin Durant has got here, and it's getting pretty narrow right now. I don't think a lot about the Western Conference contenders outside of Oklahoma City and Houston. I'm not really that high on them in general, but you look at the East, man, one injury can completely turn the NBA finals, what if the Warriors get there, on its head. And it's certainly, if something happens before that, there are big issues because the Warriors just don't have backups.
Speaking of Kevin Durant, what's going on with him? I mean, you know, Draymond was saying everything's fine, not specifically about Kevin, but just state of the team and everything gelling. But in fairness to Kevin, with exception of the game against the Celtics, he's been productive. His numbers have been what's been on par his whole career. But ever since the whole, like, boycott that those 8 days where he didn't want to be asked about the Porzingis trade, he has been in a completely different mood. And there has been times he has had those moods, whether it's social media criticism, the Draymond flare-up in November after that Clippers game in LA. But I haven't seen anyone so unhappy for someone who is still been pretty productive. And maybe on one hand, that doesn't matter if he's still doing his job, but I am wondering at what point could it matter, especially if, heaven forbid, there is some kind of flare-up or tension or adversarial moment that tests the Warriors' kind of collective tissue. What's your read on that?
Yeah, it's just one man's opinion, and that's all it can be. Right,
it's your opinion. Yeah, let's hear it, Deeds.
Kevin shouldn't be this unhappy, but I think he's pissed at the fact that we called him out on his stuff and that we know how the NBA operates. And no one was just coming out of the blue and saying that Kevin Durant is going to. It wasn't just like, I'm on Trade Machine, here's some conjecture. Like, these are conversations that very serious people around the NBA are having and people in the Warriors are having. And no one really has an answer. But geez, no one feels good about Kevin Durant re-signing with the Golden State Warriors right now. There's no evidence to point to the fact that he would. He might, but I don't think anyone is going to bet on that right now. And I do find it interesting, the subplot of this entire season, and this is well before the Draymond blow up, which we do not talk about enough, if we're being totally honest. Draymond saying, we don't need you. Like, Draymond was calling out stuff that Ethan Strauss waited months to get to. But man, the subplot of this season for me, and something that I've kept an eye on, is the balance that the Warriors have had to strike between Steph's egalitarian five-man everybody eats joy when he's operating the offense, when he's the guy kind of running the show, and then Kevin Durant's just absolutely ruthless one-on-one brilliance. And it's great that the Warriors have that, both of those kinds of smoke, right? That they can throw that at anybody in the playoffs, but they have to balance that at a pretty heavy level in the regular season, and you can see sometimes the gears grind a little bit. And they've been grinding a lot since that Porzingis thing. Maybe that's just overanalyzing it because now we're cognizant of a little bit of strife, at least from Kevin's part. But I do find it interesting in these press conferences, Kevin, whenever the Warriors lose, seems to be a big defender of how they play. And whenever they win, he's very critical of how they played. And that is a big change from recent years. And Kevin used to be, you know, kind of a happy-go-lucky, you know, this is all fun, we're just playing basketball guy. And as soon as he started saying, I just want to play basketball, I don't want to have to deal with this extra BS, he's been providing a lot of the extra BS. So there's a cognitive dissonance there that I haven't been able to rectify, but I do think it's ultimately because there's some stuff happening in back rooms that maybe didn't want to get out. And now a lot of people feel very strongly in one direction, and it's kind of blowing up Kevin's scene a little bit.
And the other thing on top of that is he's often gone out of his way to contradict Steve Kerr on things. And some of it's philosophical things. Some of it's just things that don't really matter. And, you know, it's been pointed out to a few of us, hey, you know, don't read too much into what he said after the game against the Celtics, where, you know, Steve was lamenting that they weren't playing with enough edginess and anger defensively. And he kind of asked sarcastically, I thought we were all about playing with joy. And, you know, it was pointed out, well, he's done that from time to time. This isn't the first time, but it just seems unnecessary, number one, at worst. And two, you wonder, is it a sign of other things? And the thing that Steve was making, like, these things aren't mutually exclusive. You can play angry while being happy. And I think his main point is he's always talked about, ever since they've started winning championships, they were always within the top five defensively because they played with an edge. They played with an anger that, you know, Draymond largely spearheaded. But offensively, they would play with joy because that's kind of what Steph has. So, like, these ideas are mutually exclusive, but to get back to the larger point, more and more he seems to be saying things that suggest that he's not really seeing eye to eye with what Steve's saying.
Well, the Warriors have always, because they're a revolution, right, and they have been at the vanguard of how the league is now universally played outside of a few teams, there's an existentialism to sort of the Warriors way. And you hit the nail on the head. On the defensive end, it is grittiness, toughness, versatility, led by Draymond Green, who embodies all of those things. And on the offensive end, it's Steph's team. And I do think that with that one-on-one deal, Kevin Durant has had to essentially treat this entire year, if not last year as well, because he was on a one-year deal, as a referendum of sorts of the Warriors. Do I want to be here long term? Is this where I see myself fully? And I can empathize with him on this. It's tricky. This will always be Steph's team. And Kevin Durant is one of the greatest players of all time. He might be the greatest scorer in the history of the NBA when it's all said and done. But because Steph came here and they won two titles, or at least one title, and then 73 games out of nothing, from nowhere. And it was this incredible feel-good story that created this monolith that we have going on here. Again, no one saw it coming. Out of nothing, it will always be Steph's team. And Steph is here for the long run. And Kevin might have taken into account in that I'm always going to be second fiddle. And I'm not like Clay, where Clay is just like, leave me alone. I don't care. I'll be seventh fiddle if I need to be. I just want to, you know, Clay doesn't need all the trappings and stuff. Kevin likes the trappings as much as he says he doesn't. Every bit of, you know, the boardroom, 35 ventures, these are all great things. And the trappings have created a lot of good in the community. There's a downside to it. And you take into account, I found that comment to Tim Kawakami last night interesting. I thought we were supposed to be playing with joy. This is a guy who doesn't understand necessarily what he's supposed to be doing, how he fits into this. Because if I'm him, I'm thinking I might be the best player on the planet. You should be fitting to me. And yet I'm now having to do something that is almost diametrically opposed in order to fit in with this. If I'm the best player on the planet and I can't even have my own team, that doesn't feel tenable long term. And I think that maybe we're starting to see that stuff fray, and he's kind of giving away the game in that regard. And that's ultimately what would draw him to New York or the Clippers or some other place, which is I get to have my own team. I get to create my own legacy. It's me. And certainly he's someone who deserves that level of recognition. It's a shame that he'll never get it here, but ultimately Steph is one of the all-time greats in the history of the league.
Yeah, I do want to chime in on that, like with the caveat of, you know, at least for me, like you're always, I think, humbled by you don't know what you don't know. And, yes. And these guys have private lives, and it's our job to talk about what they're doing publicly within the realm of sports. But, you know, I think Kevin's mostly been forthcoming. And I remember getting a chance to talk with him before they played the Knicks. Like, he didn't want to go down the whole like free agency speculation path, but he entertained the idea of like providing a framework of just how this experience has been with the Warriors the first 2 years, beyond the obvious of, hey, I won two finals MVPs and two championships, just kind of the intricacies of how they've made this work. And he was really waxing poetic about the collaboration that he felt that he's had with Steve Kerr and Bob Myers, how they would get informal lunches, you know, just to talk and, you know, maybe nip small things in the bud. But he also emphasized like that whole notion of that he's jealous of being in Steph's shadow. Like he was stressing that's not a thing. Like he doesn't care about that. And, you know, when he won finals MVP, he was humbled by it. But like he totally would have accepted if Steph won it. But in the context of earlier in the season, just by judging on how he is on the court, body language, just interactions with teammates, just that limited scope of what we see, it feels different.
Yes.
And I don't know what beyond the obvious of, you know, it's easy to say, okay, did the Draymond stuff contribute to that, the free agency stuff? But all I can say is from the limited view that we've had, the vibe feels different there. And you just wonder, like, what beyond the obvious storylines that we see have caused that?
I mean, I can appreciate Kevin saying that that the Steph stuff doesn't matter. And maybe it doesn't. I don't know. He hasn't let us in that regard as of late. But the paradigm could have changed, and he could see an environment in which he can be in a massive market and be the dude and be a savior, much in the way Steph was here. And that's a very hard thing to manufacture and to take advantage of. And I do think that would, if I was in Kevin's shoes, I would absolutely take that into deep consideration. Why not? I keep going back to something LeBron James said when he left Miami. LeBron never went to college. And obviously, he had to grow up in the public spotlight. Kevin went to 1 year of college and he enjoyed it immensely. But he still had to grow up as a person amid incredible media scrutiny that I don't think a normal human being could possibly handle without completely cracking. And he's done it with a lot of grace, I would argue, up until this year. Maybe this is Kevin Durant's college experience, or the last 3 years of college for him, and that he is getting a lot out of this. The Warriors have gotten even more than Kevin could have possibly have, you know, the banners speak for themselves. The finals MVP speak for themselves. The Warriors have built an entire billion-dollar arena and will print money for the next 15 years, in large part because Kevin Durant came here and guaranteed championships in a weird way. But maybe this is something that he needs to explore on his own to get there, because, again, he'll always be in Steph's shadow. And while he says that that's not something that affects him, and I don't want to dispute that statement, if he says that out loud, he can say it out loud. He can also lie. I don't know one way or another, but just I'm putting myself in my shoes as ridiculous in his shoes, as ridiculous as that sounds. This New York opportunity, which has presented itself and is presented itself in the middle of the season, which I'm not sure he was totally thrilled about. But the fact that it presented itself, you have to take that into deep consideration, because if you can, as the song goes, if you can do it there, you can do it anywhere. And if you do it there, one title in New York, I don't know how many that's worth in LA or up here or something, but it's worth a lot. And when you take into account the state of that franchise, and ultimately, the fact that he can't say, like, Clay has come out and said, I want to be here. Even if Clay's lying to us, which I don't think he is, because I don't think Clay lies to people. Even if he's lying to us, he's come out and said it. Kyrie has put himself, dug a hole for himself by saying, I'm definitely staying in Boston. And then 6 months later goes, ask me on July 1. Kevin hasn't really let in one way or another. All we know is that he doesn't like talking about it. And that if we talk about free agency, it has to be absolutely on his terms, and he can control that thing. And that's his prerogative, and good for, you know, he's allowed to do that. It is what it is. But these fears from the fan base are not going to go away. These questions are not going to go away. Everything, the entire state of the league is held up by his decision, much in the way it was for LeBron. Kevin leaves the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors, as we know them, don't exist. They're not the monolith anymore. They have a new arena. They have great players. They're a playoff team, I would imagine. But it's not the Warriors, the vaulted Warriors that ruined the league. And if he stays, we're talking not one, not two, not three, we're four, five, six. And that's a lot of weight. And I don't know what the right answer is there. I think a lot of people would like to pretend that they know the right answer, which is, oh, you got to stay. But I don't know. Depends on what your priorities are. And I'm not one to say what his priorities should be. So there's a lot going on. That's a lot to carry on your shoulders while you also have to fight complacency and a lot of other teams that are really good and a roster that is not as good as it has been in the past, and you're carrying a heavier load. There's a lot going on for Kevin Durant right now. I can empathize with it. At the same time, he could have signed a 4 or 5 year deal last year, and none of this would have been an issue if he really wanted to stay. So something has absolutely changed. I agree with you 100%, and I'm interested to see if it exacerbates or if it loosens up here in the weeks to come, because I thought that this would dissipate a little bit more post the Ethan blow up in the press conference. I thought that we would kind of all go back to being chummy, and it would be this weird loose thing that we've had going on for the last couple of years. It's been a pretty utopic concept of how we deal with Kevin Durant, but it has not been that. And I don't know. I don't see a lot of signs that say it's going to get back to that point.
Yeah, well stated. That's why we asked for your opinion, Dieter. Let's hear
45 minutes of it.
That was good. This is going to be chopped up, aggregated, deets going all out.
I was on a radio show this morning, and I said I'm gearing up to write the column that Kevin Durant is leaving. And as soon as I said it, the guys on the other end are like, "Whoa!" And
I'm like, "Free writing 3 months in advance."
Yeah, I got to. I got things to do in July. It's a binary scenario. I was telling somebody about this at practice today. I don't know what Kevin's going to do, but I'm going to be ready for both, and then I'm going to get on a plane.
There you go. Let's hear from what Steve Kerr was saying. He hit on a lot of state of the team stuff, the Andrew Bogut signing, a lot of good stuff. So let's hear from him, and then we'll close up shop here with Dieter after this.
So we're excited about Bogues coming in. Looked at this as insurance policy in the front court. A guy who obviously knows our system, he knows our players, half of them. He's great for our offense. You know, dribble handoffs, his passing ability, his lob threat, and defensively, you know, he's been one of the best in the game for a long time. He had a great season in Sydney. He's healthy, he's fresh, and he's the best player available for us. And we have to look ahead to the playoffs at different matchups, and we felt vulnerable, particularly in case of injury, against certain matchups. So that's why Bogues is coming.
Do you expect him to slide into, like, an immediate role?
I have no idea how it's going to play out. That's not the expectation. You know, Bogues and I have spoken, and the whole idea is he's coming in with no expectations for minutes. It's just he's going to be a part of our team, and whatever the situation calls for, then we'll use him for that.
What kind of attitude does he bring as a competitor and teammate this week?
Yeah, I mean, he's always had an edge to him as a defender, shot blocker. You know, we could use some of that right now, just the grit. And I think the veteran presence, it's all
It's all good. It's all it can only help. And so we're excited to get him, and we'll see how the process goes over the next week. I know he's got to take care of visa issues, and so when we talked the other day, he said he expected to be here sometime next week. I think we're on the road somewhere next week, but so we'll see how it goes.
He said in April that he expected his NBA days to be done. What was his reaction when you guys first reached out to him?
Well, I know the first contact was a couple of months ago. Larry Harris went over there, saw him play recently, but I think there was a contact a couple of months ago with his agent, and I don't know who initiated it, but so we were aware it was a possibility once the season was done. And obviously he doesn't apply to that April or the March 30th or April 1st date on buyout guys, since he wasn't playing in the NBA. So we knew he would have eligibility for the playoffs. So it was always an option, but it had to play out. And I think Larry's trip over there and seeing how healthy Andrew is, he averaged close to 30 minutes a game, he's MVP of the league. He's still got something to offer. And whatever role that means, you know, he's ready to accept and take on the challenge, and we're excited to have him.
Draymond said you guys had a stern meeting that thing today that a lot of people spoke of. What was today like, especially on
I think just, you know, coming off a loss last night forces you to take a look in the mirror, whether you're a coach or a player or anything within the organization. We all have to look at ourselves, and I definitely did that last night. Didn't like what I saw in terms of my own coaching job last night. And so we came in, we had a good film session. We talked about our flaws, where we need to get better. And we had a good practice. So hopefully that will carry over to another good one tomorrow, and then a good game on Friday. We'll try to rebuild the momentum that we've lost here over the last few weeks.
What didn't you like that you did?
Excuse me?
What didn't you like that you did?
We didn't execute offensively. I like to let us play. Last night was a night where we needed to execute. I needed to get us into more sets to counter what Boston was doing defensively, particularly without Clay. So I didn't feel like I did a very good job there. And then our defensive game plan could have been tighter. We're probably throwing a little too much at the guys right now, so we want to simplify things and take care of the basics. You know, you got to take care of the basics before you can get into, you know, any wrinkles. And right now, we're not taking care of the basics.
I think players appreciate hearing that from you. Here's where I didn't do as well as I wanted to do. It's a big conversation with that transparency. How far does that go?
I don't know. You can ask them. I just think it's the best way to operate. You know, to just be honest. Point out their flaws. Point out my flaws. Nobody's perfect. We're all going to make mistakes, but we're all in this together. So we have to work on our weaknesses and our flaws together. My job is to point them out and to execute a practice plan with my coaches that addresses our needs. And their job is to execute those. And if we're all doing those things, we've proven we can do pretty well.
You have a couple of days still. How's Clay's knee? And what is? I haven't actually seen.
Yeah, Clay did not practice today, nor did Sean Livingston. Looney did practice. Looney's feeling better. I expect him to play Friday. And I guess Clay and Sean are still questionable.
Steve, you said, you know, everyone can talk about their faults, but Draymond just said, we're not competing. How do you coach back? How do you get them to compete?
Well, that's a flaw. You know, that has to be the umbrella over everything that you do, right? You can talk about all the little details, whether you're handling the ball right or executing your offense or handling pick and roll coverages defensively. You have to do all that stuff, but that has to come within the context of serious competition. Our competitive level last night left a lot to be desired, and it showed on the tape, and our guys acknowledged that. And You address it, you show it, and you demand it, and players have to demand it from each other, and you move on.
Generally speaking, it seems like Draymond's played pretty well defensively. What's going to be the key to getting the rest of the team, you know, to kind of follow his lead on that side of it?
All those details that we talked about, you know, the details defensively always matter, and then the competitive desire on top of all that. And you put all that together, and you got a good formula, and we got enough defensive-minded players to get it done, and you know, we'll get it done.
You had an East Coast road trip at this time of the year, coming back from the East Coast, playing these games, and down the road again. Kind of circle that this could be kind of a difficult time travel-wise?
Not really. Sorry to ruin your story. It's just part of, you know, every team goes through it. So you understand it. In the NBA, you're going to have some road trips. You got tough stretches in your schedule, whatever. So you just take it on as it comes.
Okay, Dieter. Moving forward, these last few regular season games, March through April 11th, I think. What do you think the Warriors can do to fix all these things? Like, what's realistic to be fixed, knowing who they are, the championship equity, the talent, Andrew Bogut's arrival, versus things that maybe you're not sure that they'll be resolved once the playoffs start?
Yeah, my big question is DeMarcus Cousins actually any good on the defensive end? Is he playable in the playoffs? Because I've said this time and time again, come playoff time, teams don't care if it's aesthetically pleasing to watch their games. They will go Houston Rockets and run the same damn play every single time down the court. And that play for them will be squaring up DeMarcus Cousins and saying, "You're the man we're going at." And right now, he's doing nothing to stop them. If this was a playoff series, I don't think he could play against the Houston Rockets. I don't think you can have him on the court unless James Harden wasn't. And even then, I don't feel great with him if Chris Paul's playing. Now, he'll probably tweak something in the next couple of weeks and keep him out of the playoffs, but that's just Chris Paul. He was unplayable against the Boston Celtics. He's been unplayable against good teams. And you got 4 weeks. We've seen improvement. He looks like the Achilles is getting better, but he was never a good defender to begin with. And now we're expecting a pretty marked leap. It starts with the Warriors putting out some effort. I'm fascinated to see what they do on Friday. The Nuggets are coming to town. I do not view the Nuggets as necessarily a real threat in the Western Conference because they're inexperienced. They're playing pretty garbage basketball right now. They missed a golden opportunity to take the one seed from the Warriors. They could have claimed it with the Warriors' recent run, and instead they've been sort of matching them blow for blow in terms of suckiness. The Warriors sound like a team that's going to make a statement on Friday. They're gearing up for that. They had a come to Jesus meeting. They're all talking about we're going to put in a number one effort, all this stuff. It feels like they're going to gear up, put that game out there, say, "Told you so," and then do whatever the hell they do for another week. And then they'll be in another situation where they have to do that. And that's fine. That's just the way that this thing goes. But the Cousins thing, I need to see market improvement defensively from DeMarcus Cousins to feel comfortable that he's worth playing 15, 20, 30 minutes in a playoff series, because right now we're nowhere near that. And even if he has a good offensive game, I just don't feel comfortable saying that he's worth, you know, he's worth the sweet, you know, the apple's not worth the bite, or the candy's not worth the bite. It's a weird scenario. So the Cousins thing is a number one on the list. But again, the Warriors got to get healthy. I'd be interested to see how they handle rest down the stretch, knowing that they got to get cohesive with the five-man unit. At the same time, they got to make sure that guys like Draymond and Clay and Andre and Steph and KD, they need to also get rest so that they're ready to go. So it's a fine balance. I don't envy Steve Kerr at all in this regard, but I do think that Boogie needs to be priority one, two, and three. And so long as they give effort, everything else will sort itself out. But you got to understand what you have with this guy, because you do not want to be figuring that out in the playoffs. That's how you end up down 0-1 and having to adjust rotations going into like a must-win sort of game two in the playoffs in the first round. That's not somewhere the Warriors have been. It's not somewhere they want to be.
Man, those are some good takes. Good fire. Good analysis.
Thank you.
This is why everyone who's listening to this podcast, you got to subscribe to the Mercury News East Bay Times, because Dieter, he's He's pumping out columns with a lot of good, honest opinions. Doesn't hold back. Pretty good deal we got going on, Dieter. I think it's the Clay Thompson deal. It's 11 cents a day for 11 months.
Damn.
Yeah, pretty good. Get all access to the website. Get all access to the Warriors HQ podcast by subscribing on iTunes. It's also running like everywhere. Google, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. I already said that. I think I covered all bases.
We're on Spotify.
I think we're on Spotify. I think we're on SoundCloud as well.
Maybe.
So a lot of different avenues. You got me, Mark G underscore Medina on Twitter for some information, some analysis, usually some bad puns that make Dieter groan. Follow Dieter Kurtenbach, D Kurtenbach on Twitter for all the amazing takes, video highlights, everything there. And let's just keep it rolling. Thanks so much for listening now, but we'll have some more in the pipe in the next few days to come.